I met one gentleman on a coastal ferry from Portland to Seattle. He had worked in the licensing department for an advertising agency, specifically in charge of procuring the rights to classic rock songs for television commercials. Now he was a chimney sweep, given that most homes in Seattle had lost their central heat, and the winters were now longer and colder. He was seldom idle. "I help keep my neighbors warm," he said proudly. I know it sounds a little too Norman Rockwell, but I hear stories like that all the time. "You see those shoes? I made them. That sweater, that's my sheep's wool. Like the corn, my garden." That was the upshot of a more localized system. It gave people the opportunity to see the fruits of their labor. It gave them a sense of individual pride to know that they were making a clear, concrete contribution to victory. It gave me a wonderful feeling that I was part of that. I needed that feeling. It kept me sane for the other part of my job. So much for talent. Tools are the weapons of war, and the industrial and logistical means by which those weapons are constructed.
He swivels in his chair, motioning to a picture above his desk. I lean closer and see that it's not a picture, but a framed label.
Ingredients: molasses from the United States, anise from Spain, licorice from France, vanilla, bourbon from Madagascar, cinnamon from Sri Lanka, cloves from Indonesia, wintergreen from China, pimento berry oil from Jamaica, balsam oil from Peru. And that's just for a bottle of peacetime root beer. We're not even talking about something like a desktop PC or a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. Ask anyone how the Allies won the Second World War. Those with very little knowledge might answer it was our numbers or generalship. Those without any knowledge might point to techno-marvels like radar or the atom bomb.
Sinclair scowls.
Anyone with the most rudimentary understanding of that conflict will give you three real reasons. First, the ability to manufacture more materiel, more bullets, beans, and bandages than the enemy. Second, the natural resources available to manufacture that materiel. And third, the logistical means not only to transport those resources to the factories, but also to transport them out to the front lines. The Allies had the resources, industry, and logistics of an entire planet. The Axis, on the other hand, had to depend on what scant assets they could scrape up within their borders. This time, we were the Axis. The living dead controlled most of the world's landmass, while American war production depended on what could be harvested within the limits of the Western states specifically. Forget raw materials from safe zones overseas. Our merchant fleet was crammed to the decks with refugees, while fuel shortages had dry-docked most of our navy. We had some advantages. California's agricultural base could at least erase the problem of starvation if it could be restructured. The citrus growers didn't go quietly. Neither did the ranchers. The beef barons who controlled so much prime potential farmland were the worst. You ever hear of Don Hill? You ever see the movie Roy Elliott did on him? It was when the infestation hit the San Joaquin Valley, the dead swarming over his fences, attacking his cattle, tearing them apart like African driver ants. And there he was in the middle of it all, shooting and hollering like Gregory Peck in Duel in the Sun. I dealt with him openly and honestly. As with everyone else, I gave him the choice. I reminded him that winter was coming and there were still a lot of very hungry people out there. I warned him that when the hordes of starving refugees showed up to finish what the living dead started, he'd have no government protection whatsoever. Hill was a brave, stubborn bastard, but he wasn't an idiot. He agreed to surrender his land and herd only on the condition that his and everyone else's breeding stock remained untouched. We shook on that.